You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Hi, this is Alex Ruggieri. Thanks for joining us today. Got a wonderful show lined up for you. And we are starting right out with Emily Cross. She is the Development Director for CASA. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah. So excited. I happen to serve on their board. And a couple of months ago, I was delighted when you were introduced to everybody. And you come to us with a long pedigree of development work and formerly being with the YMCA there.
Yes.
On was that McKinley YMCA?
It's the University YMCA.
University
yes,
of
on
Illinois
campus.
YMCA. Yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of like what the doctor ordered for CASA. So, I mean, it's really been an exciting time and we're just delighted. So tell us what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am thrilled to be here. I guess I've been here for 6 weeks now, which is crazy. Time is flying by. And I am really excited about the opportunity. I think CASA has so much going for it. It's a fantastic organization, very well run. Obviously, the mission speaks for itself.
Let's just take a minute, mm-hmm. if you don't mind. And talk about that.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, people hear CASA and they may not even know what it is. We know what it is. Most of the community does. But why don't you talk a little bit about CASA? It stands for mm-hmm. Court Appointed Special Advocates.
Correct.
All right. So who are they advocating for? What's it all about?
Absolutely. So CASA is the only organization in Champaign County that is specifically dedicated to protecting the best interest of a child who has been placed in the juvenile court system because of abuse or neglect. Mm-hmm. So these are our cases when, you know, kids, we have almost half of our cases are children under the age of six. And they come into the court system because they have been taken from their homes or some sort of issue has come up where they need to be, you know, ushered through the court system. And we need to figure out what is the best home for them. Is it returning home? Is it being placed in a foster care home? You know, is adoption our goal? And so CASA works with the kids throughout every step of that process. I've been here for 6 weeks now, and I've gone through the 30-hour training. It is incredibly overwhelming. There's a lot of information about the system. It's an overburdened system. I can't imagine being a six-year-old and facing that system. So what we do is we recruit and train advocates who work with those kids step by step, and they stay with the case until the case is closed. And so that's really important.
Because what do the advocates do?
They have a lot. They have a lot of responsibilities. So, you know, essentially, their goal is to be the objective third party and really understand the child's case, you know, go to the home that they're in, whether it's in a foster home or whether they are, you know, going to visit their parents, you know, writing reports for the court. I think that's really something that is essential. These judges see so many cases. We have, you know, 270 cases right now, 360 kids in the court system.
Really?
Yes, it's quite, I mean, it's a lot. And the judges have to make really, you know, life-changing decisions. And so the CASA's job, the advocate's job, is to understand the case, understand what's happening in the home, and make a really great report to the judge so that the judge understands the situation and can make that best call for whatever the, you know, what's in the best interest of the child. So it is an incredibly important job. We have about 100 advocates right now. And obviously we have, you know, 361 kids right now, as I just said.
So
we're
like
always looking for more advocates.
Or something to one, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so.
But that's better than 20 to 1 or something like some of these state agencies have, you know.
It is. And, you know, we say that we really work with the agencies. I can't imagine being, you know, a caseworker with DCFS, that's Department of Child and Family Services, or, you know, some of the agencies that work, you know, as nonprofits with DCFS. Their caseloads are incredible. It's huge. They're often, you know, underpaid. They're overworked. And so CASA's job is to step in and work with them because our CASAs have more time to go to the home, to go to the school and talk with the counselor, to talk with the nurse, to talk with, you know, the therapist, and just really understand each aspect of this child's life and get a clear picture of where the child needs to be going and what is in the best interest of that child.
Yeah. Did They teach you very much about the history of CASA. Mm-hmm. Did they talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really interesting to me because, you know, this was not something that that really started until the 70s in our country. In Seattle, there was a judge there who was he was hearing these cases, and he just thought, I can't make decisions for these kids. I don't know anything about these kids. You know, the reports from the agencies will come to the judges, and there will be either pieces missing, or you don't really feel like you're seeing the whole picture of this child's life or the life at home. And so he really started it. So CASA started in the 70s in Seattle. It wasn't until 1994 that we in Champaign County started training court-appointed special advocates. And that was really all because of Judge DeLamar, Jack DeLamar, when he was hearing child abuse neglect cases. I think at one point he just got really frustrated and said, I don't have enough information. I need to know what's happening. Uh-huh. And so he was really the reason why we were let into the courtroom. And with this really robust training that every CASA goes through, we're able to be really sworn in, you know, as an advocate and be a member of that case. So be party to the case. And so that's a big responsibility. And our CASAs remain objective. They look at the case through an objective adult's eye, and they really recommend to the judge, you know, what the next course of action is. So we have been, you know, in as an organization, we've been founded since 1994. In 2002, though, something really special happened. You know, there's the CASA piece of the child abuse neglect cases, and those are the advocates, the volunteers who, you know, shepherd the child, you know, through the system. But then there's this guardian ad litem piece, and that's the attorney representing the child. And oftentimes, with most cases, and until 2002, those are two separate entities. So we have the CASA, who's the, you know, the volunteer, but then the court appoints some sort of private attorney, usually, to actually represent the child in the court, be their attorney. And in 2002, Judge DeLamar retired from the bench, and he volunteered to be the GAL for all of the cases in Champaign County, to be that those kids' attorney. And that was incredible, and it was really important in our history, because oftentimes with other counties and the way that it was before 2002, you have a private attorney who may not be an expert in child welfare. They may have a huge caseload themselves. They have all of these other demands on their time. It's really difficult for a private attorney to meet with the kids, you know, to go to the home, to understand all of the aspects of the case, to know who the caseworker is on the case, you know, because that changes. It's too much.
It's monumental.
It's monumental. So I think it's really important for our CASA, what makes our CASA unique, that Judge DeLamar was able to start that precedent of having CASA actually house the attorneys that are representing our kids.
Wow.
Now we have two attorneys. They work only on these cases. You know, CASA works with them every day. They come to our office.
Wow.
They know our advocates. They know our workers. So that provides really a different level of representation for our children than, you know, a private attorney really could do, because they know the case.
Mm-hmm.
Not that a private attorney is a bad person,
mm-hmm.
but they're not in CASA every mm-hmm. single day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was, to me, something that I didn't know until I started here at CASA and went through the training. And I've seen the difference that that makes.
Yeah,
and it's really
it's
compelling.
Huge. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I just got back from, we were on a vacation, and we were with a bunch of other couples and meeting new people.
Mm-hmm.
And we met this one company, couple from Maryland, and we were just talking, and she just, you know, I said, well, what do you guys do back home? You know, and she goes, well, you know, we do this, we do that. And I'm really involved in CASA, you know, and have you ever heard of CASA? You know, I'm like, well, as a matter of fact, I'm on the board back home, you know, and we had this great conversation. And so CASA is something that may have started in the 70s, but then has kind of spread all over
yes.
the country. So it started in Oregon, and now I think it's just all over the country.
Yes, it is. It's fantastic. And that's a resource for us in Champaign County. You know, I've been, as I've started looking at our development piece, I've reached out to several other CASAs across the country, mm-hmm. you know, across the state of Illinois, and tried to understand how they talk about their impact and their work. And so it's a resource to our CASA that we have this huge network of national and statewide CASAs. But it's also incredibly important for the kids. I can't imagine the system as it is not having that CASA piece in it. I think we would be seeing a lot, you know, less ideal outcomes for the kids in question.
I agree completely. And it's all about the kids. And unfortunately, a lot of them get caught in the, you know, the switches mm-hmm. and get lost in the cracks. And that's the one thing that CASA is there to keep from happening.
Yes.
And we're going to take a break in a minute or two, mm-hmm. but did they tell you any stories? I know you can't mention names, but they give you any background mm-hmm. on, hey, here's what happened with Sally, or here's what happened with Jimmy, and how CASA had a positive impact?
Right. Well, yeah, I can't talk about specifics, as you said. I think one case that I have I've noticed, you know, I've been sort of listening in the past 6 weeks to the cases that have been coming up. I think what's really interesting, and this just kind of shows an example of when an advocate makes a difference. There was a child who we were working with. We have four advocate coordinators on our staff. They're full time and they manage a caseload. And they were working with this child. But it wasn't until we got an advocate into the home to actually visit the home that we realized that this child had a prescription for a mental health issue that hadn't been filled for many months.
Wow.
And that child was acting out in school. Well,
wow.
No wonder.
Wow.
And this is something that, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And so our full-time advocate coordinators and the caseworkers and everybody else that was involved with this child, you know, they do their best and they're visiting the kids as much as we can and they're following up with their therapist. But it wasn't until this advocate actually went into the home and looked in the medicine cabinet and saw the bottle was empty, you know, and saw when it was last filled mm-hmm. and asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to understand that not only do we need advocates who will follow that case from start to finish and be that advocate for a child, we need advocates to just go into homes and look mm-hmm. and ask questions mm-hmm. and really find out what we don't know.
What does it take to be an advocate?
That's a great question. So you have to be 21 years old. You know, you have to pass a background check. It is about 30 to 35 hours of training.
Is there an upper age limit?
No, there is no upper.
Oh,
there's no upper age limit. And you know, we do three trainings every year. We do a spring, you know, a winter and a fall training. It's about 3 weeks. I went through the training.
Wow.
It was so important.
So how many hours a day for 3 weeks?
It's 3 hours for 3 days. You know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 3 hours a day for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And then you go into court and you watch court because that's critical to understanding, you know, what this child is going through. And then you work on a case plan with your caseworker and you get started. And there are some advocates, as I said, who will, you know, go through, who will take cases on. You know, they are the advocate. There are also some advocates who like to court watch for us so that we understand what the updates are in all the cases. There are some advocates who just go on home visits. There are some advocates who go on home visits and they have a couple cases. So we're really flexible in working with the advocates on what fits into their schedule and what works best for them. But that training is critical to, you know, making that commitment and becoming educated so that you can actually advocate for your child.
So once an advocate goes through all of this training, mm-hmm. what is their commitment and mm-hmm. time after that?
That's a great question. So, you know, CASA is flexible. I think that if you were to take a full case, you know, or a case that you were to be assigned to a child or maybe a family, it's really not as intense as the 30-hour training would suggest. It's probably a couple hours a month and going to the home visits
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and making sure everything's okay. And then it's also maybe an hour every month and writing a report for the court or
mm-hmm.
writing a report for us, just mm-hmm. so our attorneys know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, sometimes maybe a case will, you know, there will be a couple hearings in 1 month and then you'll have to write a report. And sometimes it's a little bit more intense. But most of the time you can schedule around it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, some advocates, because of their full-time jobs or because, you know, of their travel schedule, they will fit in CASA, you know, in different ways. And so you have to be committed. We ask for a 2-year commitment if you're to take on a case, because that's usually how long it takes for a child to be, you know, either returned home or for some sense of permanency to occur is 2 years. So we ask for that 2-year commitment, and then we work with the advocate, the volunteer.
Wow.
To make that happen.
It sounds really great. Mm-hmm. We have to take a short break for our sponsor's sake, but I do want to talk about your development work.
Okay, yes.
So maybe we can do that when we come back.
Sounds great.
All right, please don't go away. Much more right after this. And we're back. You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Alex Ruggieri here, and I'm having a wonderful conversation with Emily Cross, who is the new development director for CASA, which is short for Court Appointed Special Advocates for Children. And we were just talking before the break how people mm-hmm. can get involved to become a special advocate. They get special training, and then they can really help make a difference for a child. And you are specializing in mm-hmm. and have for most of your career mm-hmm. The aspect of development work,
yes.
which involves donor activities and mm-hmm. helping to raise funds for CASA. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, what are your
yeah.
plans, and what are some of the things that community should know about?
Mm-hmm.
I know we do a big gala every year, Casablanca,
yes.
and that brings in a lot of money. Not as much as we want it to, but we can always do better. But so that's one big thing. But mm-hmm. I know there's tons of other things you've got going on.
Yes. No, it's really exciting. We Casablanca, as you were saying, brings in, you know, $100,000 to $150,000 just from that one event. And that's critical to
yeah,
our organization.
That's a big chunk.
You know, fundraising in our organization is about half of our budget.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about the impact that an individual makes on a child when they're making a gift or they're coming to Casablanca, it's enormous. We wouldn't be in operation without the generosity of individuals in our community. And so that was something, you know, coming from that fundraiser background, I discovered my passion for development at the University YMCA. And I think it's really interesting because I often joke that my fiance is an attorney in town. He just graduated law school last year. And when we're at parties or, you know, meeting the neighbors, it's like, well, what do you do? I'm a fundraiser. And well, what do you do? I'm an attorney. And like, people are a lot more excited about talking to the attorney than the fundraiser. I think there's this sense
yeah.
that the fundraiser is like, you know, walking around with her hand out, like
yeah.
begging for money.
Yeah.
What's great about fundraising that I discovered, it's really not like that. It is, uh-huh. you know, inviting and creating that opportunity for an individual to make an impact. CASA
yeah.
is a strong organization and it is well run.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking for in increasing our development is really growing the number of advocates, growing our recruitment. We need more advocates for our kids, and growing the amount of staff and maybe staff support so that we can better serve our children. So what we are looking for is not, you know, it's not a begging or a crisis situation. And that was important to me when I accepted the position, to know that this is a really well-run organization. We have a great board. I think that what's exciting about CASA is that we have a lot of opportunities to create sort of a development plan or development program and work with our donors and the community so that we can really grow the impact that CASA's making.
Yeah, and you were saying some things the mm-hmm. other day at the board meeting that I thought was very interesting because you talked about, I don't know if it was a legacy gift or whatever, mm-hmm. but people can actually name CASA as a beneficiary in their estate or for their life insurance and things like that. Maybe we can talk about that for a second.
Yes. So it is really important. I think that when you look at Champaign County abuse neglect cases, there will always be a need for CASA, unfortunately. I can't see a situation where that need won't be there. And so,
well, I remember in the New Testament, mm-hmm. the apostles are talking to the Savior, and at one point there somebody says, oh, well, we could have sold that perfume to to give money to the poor or something like that. And he said, the poor will always be with you. I'm only going to be with you for a little while. And when you look at that, I mean, that was said, whatever, 2,500 years ago or whatever, 2,000 years ago. The poor will always be with you. Well, these situations are always going to be with us.
Yes.
They're just going to be with us.
And I think we have an obligation to be around for many, many years to come. Mm-hmm. And I see that that is happening. I believe that that will continue to happen. But when you think about the legacy that you want to make, you know, for individuals who are considering, you know, their estate plan or thinking about, you know, making a planned gift, there is a tremendous impact that can be made by naming CASA, you know, as a beneficiary. And I think we have a duty as CASA to stay strong and stay around and grow, you know, for these kids that we serve. And so it's really rewarding to me to talk with individuals about that possibility that they can, you know, make that planned gift and really know that they're leaving behind an impact that will, you know, end the cycle of poverty for so many kids, you know, in Champaign County for years to come.
It's a very rewarding thing to do. There's no question about it. And that's one of the reasons I served on the board for these last many years. And I really believe in our children and helping them. And this is one way to do it. And it's really a great organization. So what other things can people do if they're interested to, you know, I mean, they can name in the insurance, but there's other things too.
Absolutely. So we have the Casablanca event in October. I think that's been going really well.
Yeah.
It's October 19th this year. So if you're excited about that, mark your calendars.
Yep.
We rely on, you know, the charitable gifts from individuals every year. So we, you know, we have every year we ask individuals to make a gift to CASA, and that makes a tremendous impact in, you know, just the day-to-day operations and our ability to serve these kids.
Well, I know businesses do things too. I mean, a lot of times I've seen businesses provide services at a discount or provide services for free if they can help CASA, you know, say, hey, well, you know, we'll send a couple of our guys or, you know, we'll print these items for you so you don't have to go and pay for them. And, you know, even stuff like that helps.
It is. That's critical. We need to be able to focus as much support as we can on the service that we're providing. And the outcomes that we're trying to get for our kids in the court system. So many, you know, we have some fantastic sponsors for our events. You know, we're expanding our office spaces, hopefully.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Yep.
And you know, we're going to be needing exciting things like maybe more furniture or training equipment. But that's critical because we have to make sure that our advocates are trained and they're, you know, it's a good environment for that. And that's conducive to learning and becoming a great advocate. And so there are always different ways to get involved. And I think what's exciting about my position is I'm always listening and trying to understand what, you know, what we can leverage. So some people can't make a gift, but, you know, maybe they can become an advocate. And some people don't have the time to become an advocate, but maybe they can sponsor a child. Maybe they can make a monthly gift. What's exciting to me is that there's so many ways to make an impact on that child's life and to really help rewrite their story. And I'm just here to plug them in to the right way to do that.
I just think it's wonderful. And, you know, there's so many needs out there. But the thing about CASA is this is helping kids right here in Champaign County. And I mean, you know, I know you see all these different things on TV, you know, help these kids. And, you know, they're in South America or they're in Africa. And my heart's close to that. My daughter's in Africa and they're building health clinics over there and doing things. And, you know, we need to be aware of that and do what you can. But this is helping kids right here in Champaign County. So in just the last minute here that we've got, how can people get in touch if they are interested in doing something?
Yes. So I would encourage everybody to visit our website. It's CASA4kids.org. So CASA4kids.org. And, you know, there you can find out about upcoming upcoming trainings. The next one is in probably mid-September. We haven't released that date yet, but we'll be posting that soon. We also have a Facebook page, Champaign County CASA, to stay updated. You can make a gift on our website. You can fill out an information form if you're curious about becoming an advocate. The last thing I would say is, you know, regardless of whether you make a gift to CASA, whether you become an advocate, obviously I would love all of those things to happen. I would say that the most important thing I would want all of your listeners to walk away with is if you suspect that a child is being abused or neglected by somebody that they're in care with, to call the DCFS hotline. And I actually have that number in front of me. If somebody, if you want to write this down, it's 800-25-ABUSE. So that's 1-800-252-2873. A lot of people get this confusion, and I did too, of mandated reporters, you know, in school you're a mandate. Well, anybody can be a reporter. Yeah. Anybody can call that hotline. And you never know when that phone call is going to save a kid's life. So regardless of whether you go to our website or go to Facebook, if you suspect something is happening, let DCFS figure out whether that is happening, whether they want to investigate it. Make that call. So that would be my one request for everybody here.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Emily Cross. She's the new development director for CASA. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk with
and
you.
And congratulations on your upcoming nuptials there.
Thank you.
And please don't go away. We'll have so much more right after the break. And we're back. You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Thank you so much for staying with us through the break. And I think you'll be glad you did. We have a wonderful interview lined up for you now here in the second half of the show. And we are talking with Sherwin Pomerantz. He is with the Middle East Regional Office of the Illinois Department of Commerce. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Yes, and I'm so excited to be talking to you all the way in Israel. And I had the pleasure of meeting you when we were doing a joint summit between Israel and the University of Illinois, and you were there in person. And it was kind of a first. Maybe why don't you tell folks what we were trying to do there?
Yeah, actually, we do this once in a while. Our objective on behalf of the state, you know, working here on behalf of the state, is to do what we can to generate business for Illinois companies. There are a couple of ways to do that. One is you can talk to manufacturers and try to convince them to consider this market as an export market. That's one way of developing business. Another way is to attract Israeli companies who want to locate in America to consider Illinois as a location. And the third way, which is what we did in Champaign on the campus, is to try to put together joint ventures between Illinois and Israeli companies for mutual profitability. And that's really what we did that day. We had six Israeli companies sitting in a law office in Tel Aviv, presenting to an audience in Champaign what they were looking for. And we had a number, equal number of Illinois companies in Champaign speaking about what they were looking for, and there was dialogue back and forth. We've done some follow-up since. There seems to be some ongoing conversation. So basically, it's sort of old-fashioned matchmaking, except instead of bringing together potential married couples, on a social level, we're doing it on the business level.
That's fantastic. And the state of Illinois supports this. How long has that office been over there in the Middle East?
We've been running this office for about 15 years.
And have you been there that long, Sherwin?
Yes, I'm actually here 34 years. I lived in the Chicago suburbs. I'm actually a graduate of the University of Illinois.
Wow.
I did a master's degree in mechanical engineering there more years ago than I want to remember. And I ended up living in Des Plaines, just near the airport, near O'Hare, for the better part of 20 years, and then came here 34 years ago, basically from Chicago.
Wow. And in all that time that you've been over there advocating for Illinois, maybe you've got some stories, some success stories even. I mean, what can you tell us?
Yeah. First of all, your listeners should know that even though we're headquartered here in Jerusalem, we cover the region of the state. So that includes Israel, of course, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the UAE, you know, pretty much the entire Middle East. Our biggest success story ever, oddly enough, was in Saudi Arabia, where we were asked to try to find a supplier for the new King Abdullah State Technical University that they were opening up there, and they wanted high-tech furniture. And we found the supplier in Illinois that ended up selling about $12 million worth of furniture to the university.
How cool.
Did that, you know, from our office in Jerusalem.
Wow.
Some other examples of things that we do every January, the second largest life science exhibition in the world is in Dubai. It's called Arab Health. And each year we bring between 7 and 10. This year we had 9 Illinois companies in the life science sector exhibiting at a pavilion, at an Illinois State pavilion in Dubai in January. And we set up advance appointments for them with companies not only from the Gulf Cooperation Council, which is the UAE and states around that, but even with people from India and Saudi Arabia and what have you. And this year, I think we had set up about 140 advance one-on-one appointments with Illinois manufacturers in the life science sector. In November of last year, we did a show here in Israel in the water technology area, and we had 6 Illinois companies dealing in that area that came to Israel, and we did the same thing for them there. We'll be at Arab Health again in January. That's a big show for us. We also had Illinois companies here in February for the cybertech. Israel has become the second largest world center of cybertech development. Actually, almost 60% of all investment in cybertech, you know, security and what have you, it comes into Israel. And so earlier this year, it was an annual show in that sector, and I think we also had 6 Illinois companies at that show. So this is the kind of work we do. We also, where we can, try to attract Israeli companies who are looking to open up in the Midwest to do so in Illinois. We had a success last year in Franklin Park, again, not far from O'Hare, an Israeli metals company that wanted to open a logistical center in the Chicago area, and they located in Franklin Park. So that gives you sort of a sense of the kind of work we do.
Wow, that's really very impressive, and I'm so glad that we have somebody working on it. You know, the state of Illinois has enough vision to support an office like that. Now, is it just you over there, or do you have a staff, and how many folks are over doing all this?
No, that's a good question. We have a staff. We have 5 people. 2 of our 5 people also speak Arabic.
Wow.
One of them is actually native to the, you know, Palestinian Arab, who obviously that's our native language.
Right.
And one of our trade director, Seth Vogelman, also speaks Arabic. Although I must tell you that most of the business world here speaks English, so it's not really a major challenge. But it's good to have people with extra language capabilities. So within the office, we have Arabic, we have Hebrew, we have English, we have French, German, Russian. We also have a mission coming in next month from the Ukraine, so we're picking up a bit of Ukrainian. And yeah, that's what we do.
Wow. So tell us, you've told me some really great stories about what's happening in the last 20, 30 years you've been over there. What are the day-to-day things like? What do you do day-to-day over there?
Well, in terms of Illinois, you know, in addition to trade missions and setting those up, we also have a regular inflow of inquiries from Illinois companies looking to access markets in this region. And so at work, again, basically we're matchmakers.
Mm-hmm.
We try to identify, you know, which countries seem to be best for them. And then once we make that identification based on analysis, we then identify importers and distributors that might be interested in discussing the option of representing them here. So that more or less, that's our day-to-day work for the state over above and beyond the handling of the trade shows and trade mission.
That is really interesting.
It's not a huge expense for the state. We're a private company. The state is a client. They pay us an annual. And, you know, if we perform, we get our contract renewed. And if we don't perform, we don't.
Wow. So that is really neat. I didn't realize that aspect of it. That makes so much more sense, too.
Yeah. It goes out to bid. They have to rebid it every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when they award the contract, it's a 3-year contract with an option to renew for 2 more years, you know, individually for 2 more years.
Mm-hmm.
So we are now, as of July 1, we'll be going into the 5th year of this current contract, which means that next spring they'll be rebidding it again.
So you represent other people besides the state of Illinois also over there?
We do. We represent some other states. We represent the province of Ontario. And we also represent Invest Hong Kong.
Wow, that is fantastic. Well, what kind of products from Illinois do people want over there in the Mideast?
Well, you know, first of all, there's a huge market for agriculture-related products.
Okay.
Both processed food and raw materials. You know,
okay.
Raw food as well. But processed foods for sure. There's always a market here for that. Israel is a strange country because people look at the population and say, well, how big a market can there be with 8 million people?
Right.
But our capita GDP and purchasing power is equal to the United States. So on a per capita basis, we're almost at $40,000 a year gross domestic product per capita.
Wow.
So, and it's a tremendous amount of buying power here, even though it's a small population. The reverse, by the way, is also true. Israel is America's 11th largest source of foreign direct investment into the country.
Really?
And we're the 11th largest source and the 8th fastest growing source, which is an amazing statistic for a small place. So ag is a big thing. Machinery, we don't really manufacture much. So machinery, you know, we do a lot of tech, and we do a lot of software development. We don't make computers. We don't make printers. We don't make hard drives. We don't produce automobiles. We don't produce machinery or equipment. And so all of that has tremendous potential because all of that's imported. And that's true, by the way, in most of the region, most of the countries, and with the possible exception of Turkey. And we don't really handle Turkey for the state. Most of these countries don't have significant manufacturing capability. So the balance of payments on trade deficits are always very much in favor of the U.S. So machinery, equipment-related, Caterpillar is a huge exporter. I mean, these are not necessarily people we deal with. We tend to deal with small to medium-sized enterprises, commonly referred to as SMEs. The big guys like Caterpillar or John Deere, you know, they don't. Not much we can do for them. They're doing a lot of business here. They don't need us.
Right.
They've got their own people.
Right.
But they're part of the export framework. In other words, they're huge exporters to this part of the world. Okay. Pharmaceuticals. We do have the largest manufacturer of generic pharmaceuticals in the world. Headquartered in Israel, but having said that, they don't make everything. And so we are importers, and Illinois has some very significant pharmaceutical manufacturers, including Abbott and others in the Chicago area. The interest between Israel and Illinois is very strong. You're in central Illinois. You have one of our largest tech companies in Amdocs with hundreds of people operating right there. On your front door.
Yep.
And so there is a lot of attraction. Boeing is now headquartered in Chicago. Boeing is a major exporter LL, our national airline, only uses Boeing equipment.
Wow.
And I think we're taking delivery now of 13 new 787s over the next 18 months.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So there's a lot of business going back and forth. Unfortunately, we don't have nonstop service. We used to, some years ago, had a nonstop flight 3 days a week from Chicago to Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't operated for some years, but when the new 787s come in, it appears that they're expanding service to locations other than New York and Los Angeles. So they added a flight last year to Miami. They're planning one and out of San Francisco, and my guess is slowly but surely you'll see additional destinations that will make it possible to fly nonstop.
Wow. Well, we've got just about a minute left. If somebody's out there and they've got a product or a service, they are wanting to find out more information, how can they connect with you, Sherwin?
Well, you have, of course, your SBDC right in Champaign County.
Yep.
And Dee Cravens has done a great job there. She was the one who organized much of the work.
Kathy.
In April.
Yep.
And she's a good contact. If we get the contact directly, we also handle it and keep the CEO and Kathy aware. We're very easy to find and very easy to connect with.
Wow. Well, I am just delighted to have met you and to learn about the great work you're doing for the state of Illinois, and that you would take time to share that with us on our show today.
All right, totally my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherwin. We have been talking with Sherwin Pomerantz. He is in the Middle East Regional Office of the Illinois Department of Commerce. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, and thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more.